Welcome to the Musings series, audio book readings, reading from Photo Albums of the Heart Mind, published by All Book Books, written by monk Walter E. Harris III. Thanks for listening. Chapter 6, The Tao of Photography. This follows society's ploys and plays. And the next chapter is going to be Journey to the Center of the Heart Mind. So you get some of the feel of the flow of the overall book. The Tao of Photography, first section, See for Yourself. This traveler can't measure the effects of photographic images on the psyche, yet ventures that there has been a gradual deprogression, a loss of spiritual seeing. History is wrought with both trauma and insight. So while the invention of photographs and subsequent motion pictures on various screens can't be considered the cause, the power of the image has come to be a major shaper of how we interpret the world. The pages of this chapter are intended to give a sense of how we got to where we are today, as far as ways in which we see the world and ways we don't see. And to raise the bigger question, through whose eyes do we see the world? Because the media, advertisements, movies, etc. all vie for our attention, all seek to abduct our inner vision, our awareness of symbolic images, and the buffet of choices has made us visually lazy. Like Oedipus, society is overly attached to materiality, mother, and by its ignorance is blindly killing the spirit, father, of living things. Subconsciously, feeling the shame, society suffers from a self-inflicted blindness. One of the modern miracles is surgery to restore eyesight. But what about a metaphysical healing so that we may truly see again? A key aspect of the healing process is to understand why we are where we are. Image and the way we make and recycle images have become powerful swayers of consciousness and societal trends. Perhaps it is as simple as choosing what to see, the way meditation focuses the attention by training one's consciousness to not pay attention to what is unnecessary. But if the scenario has been trashed or poisoned, not looking won't accomplish anything. Yet, seeing things as they truly are is a starting point for right action. And the next section begins with a quote from William Blake. If the doors of perception were cleansed, everything would appear to man as it is, infinite. For man has closed himself up till he sees all things through narrow chinks of his cavern. The gist is true. Yet the word root of perception unveils a deeper truth, to take entirely. The word take is troublesome. Take a shower, take the job, take a vacation, take a hike, take your time, take care. Why does the English language seem to be always taking? We take photos, capturing a likeness, capturing light, but how often do we give thanks to the sun, light beings? Heliography, helios, Greek for sun, is, quote, the photographic process invented by Joseph Niesfor Niepce around 1822, pardon the, I guess, French pronunciation there, end quote. Settler invaders took the land. The Lakota call them and any who behave as such Wachichu, fat taker. Because they not only took what wasn't theirs, they took way more than anyone's share. Fast forward to the 1%, or perhaps 0.01%, and the 99 or 99.9%, as the Occupy movement helped reveal, but the lands were already occupied by fat taker, so it was really a reoccupy movement instead of an unoccupy movement, because the root of occupy is, quote, to grasp, seize, end quote. A Sanskrit word relating to grasp is kapati, K-A-P-A-T-I, two handfuls. You can't shake hands so as to amicably make a deal if your hands are full from grasping. Settler invaders perceived the land and resources as theirs for the taking, so they occupied. And that is the short version of how the infinite became limited. Next section begins with a quote from Sherlock Holmes. You see, but you do not observe. The antidote for perceive is observe. To serve implies respect for others. From the Latin ob, ob, in front of, before, and servare, to watch, keep safe, with mention of omens. Thus, be vigilant and get a sense of what is coming. To fully observe, one must be present and clear-minded, allowing for a vision of the future, which is often informed by the past. People observe holidays. Humans being kind are waking up to the fact that there is so much more we need to observe and care for. And here's where the books, there are a bunch of pages where the ancient Chinese pictographs, are, it's worth, in that sense, if you're into it, having the book to look at them. It's the ancient Chinese pictograph for the Tao. So the verbal explanation, we'll try to get at it. It's explained later. This is the introduction to it in this book. Basically, it's a face with guideposts. In the book Tao, the Watercourse Way by Alan Watts, with the collaboration of Ao Chung Liang Huang, is one of the most revealing little ancient pictures this traveler has ever seen. It measures approximately 1/4 inch width by 1/4 inch height. The above is an enlarged version from this author's brush calligraphy. Quote, the ideogram for Tao shows the moving sign crossroads enclosing a head, end quote. The combination conveys rhythmic movement along a path, intelligent rhythm along the way. Each day we are shown signs and gateposts. How one processes that information and travels both outwardly and inwardly is a gist of the gift of Taoist philosophy. Each of us is a little thou along the greater way or path known as Tao or Tao. Circa 500 BCE, Lao Tzu is reported to have, as a court scholar, assembled the verses we now know as the Tao Te Ching or Tao Te Jin. This is called Night is a Dark Room Within Which Day Develops. Another gist of Taoist philosophy is that the light penetrates the dark, and that is what spurs things to manifest. One example is a seed planted. And though, of course, we must include water and wind, for the purpose of this example, let's keep it light. Quote, by definition, a camera is a light-proof object with a lens that captures incoming light and directs the light and resulting image towards film, optical camera, or the imaging device, digital camera. According to the Tao Te Jin, the portal of the mystical female is called the cave of impressions, into which shines the light principle. The interplay of dark and light is perhaps best known by the yin-yang symbol. Dark and light are not separate, rather two parts of a continuous whole, sliding into and out of each other. That first bit of dawn light, gently piercing the night sky. And the updated, modernized version of the Tao Te Ching with commentary, transliterated as Tao Te Jin, that's available at spirit-alembic.com/tou.html. And the next section begins with a quote from the 13th century Persian mystic poet Rumi, translated by Coleman Barks. I am so small I can barely be seen. How can this great love be inside me? Look at your eyes. They are small, but they see enormous things. This section is virtually all quotes. A pinhole camera is a simple camera without a lens, but with a tiny aperture, a pinhole. Effectively, a light-proof box with a small hole in one side. Light from a scene passes through the aperture and projects an inverted image on the opposite side of the box, which is known as the camera obscura effect. Camera obscura, or pinhole images, are a natural optical phenomenon. Early known descriptions are found in the Chinese Mozi, M-O-Z-I, writing circa 500 BCE, and the Aristotelian Problems circa 300 BC to 600 CE. And I don't know how to pronounce this name, but we'll give it a go. An Arab Muslim, Abu Ali al-Hasan ibn al-Hasan ibn al-Haytham, a.k.a. al-Hazen, circa 965 to 1040 Common Era, was an Arab Muslim scientist, mathematician, astronomer, and philosopher. He is considered to be the father of optics. Johannes Kepler was the first person to coin the phrase camera obscura in 1604, and in 1609 Kepler further suggested the use of a lens to improve the image projected by the camera obscura. The human eye itself works much like a camera obscura, with an opening, pupil, a biconvex lens, and a surface where the image is formed, retina. The next section, the Zen of Enlightenment and Photography, number one. What to China is Chan, India Dhyana, D-H-Y-A-N-A, and Korea Sion, S-E-O-N, is better known in the West as the Japanese variety of meditation, Zen. And Zen is influenced by both Buddhist and Taoist philosophy and practice. A popular mantra nowadays is be mindful, or mindfulness. To this traveler, it is a half, or more like a one-third truth. It is good to be conscious, give attention, be mindful of what one is doing, saying, thinking, yet there is also a place for mindlessness. Because meditation is actually what happens between the thoughts, when one is not thinking, rather being open and receptive, perhaps simply seeing or hearing or feeling or a good idea floating in. And a deep state of meditation is typically achieved by a conscious mindlessness. So, mindness, neither full nor empty, is a simple word way to allow for the various phases one experiences in any given day. And to add that other one-third, heart-mindness. The Zen of Enlightenment and Photography, number two, or Three Roads Converged in a Wood. In the Zen Buddhist tradition, there are three schools, Soto, Rinzai, and Obaku, which is more akin to Rinzai. Each is a method or path to enlightenment. While there is overlap of techniques, Soto encourages a gradual and steady progression to enlightenment, with an infinite emphasis on empty mind, whereas Rinzai, highlighting a one-pointed focus and the use of koans, allows for sudden enlightenment. Soto basically says, you already have Buddha nature, so don't try to get it, while Rinzai's aim is to see through the tangle, the delusion, the separate self. The shock value that a Zen master employs is a method to startle the student back on track or into sudden enlightenment, to cut through the delusional programming of the intellectual mind so as to awaken direct seeing and actual experience rather than intellectual hearsay. Zen, along with other mystical ways, aims for direct seeing into one's true nature and the nature of existence. Thus, there is ultimately no need for a middleman, though a good teacher or guide who can help point the way is to be treasured. This traveler likes both ways together as complementary, because the slow, steady, going nowhere method can also be a training ground for aha moments. Or, in the Western vernacular, it can be many years before one becomes a so-called overnight success. In a young Bob Dylan interview, when he was asked about his career, he responded that he didn't have a career and just did one thing after the other, which is an example of Zen mind, beginner's mind, where one treats each experience equally, paying close attention as if it was the first time. And yet, over time, the experience is a help too. So it all cuts or fuses together both ways. Quote, Obaku reached the fields of Japanese cultural techniques such as printing and painting. Chinese medicine and architecture were also introduced, as was the practice of spirit writing and brush calligraphy. End quote. The Zen of Enlightenment and Photography, number three, or I'm jumping Jack Flash. It's a gas, gas, gas. A quote from the Rolling Stones. Inside the camera is akin to the mystical world of meditation, and where intuitions, dreams, impressions are flashed or exposed upon the screen of consciousness. Quote, light pumps material out of darkness, end quote. Another commentary from the Tao Te Ching. Originally hours to develop, then minutes, then virtually instant, the image gradually appearing on the white paper, akin to Soto. Now, with digital, people don't think about it much. Like a sparrow dirt bath, the first explosive puff of flashlight powder in 1887 Germany, using waxy spores from club moss. The powder's formal full name, Blitzlichtpulver, a mixture of magnesium powder and potassium chlorate, invented by Adolf Mietz and Johannes Geidick. Before 1930, Paul Verkhoder's invention, magnesium-coated wire in an evacuated glass globe, aka bulbs filled with oxygen gas and electrically ignited by a contact in the camera shutter, was improved and patented by Johannes Ostermeyer. The light, once solely supplied by sunlight beings, became a puff, then a flash. What is it like when you wake up in the middle of the night and have to turn on a light? Rinzai enlightenment in the dark. Mother Earth's mechanics and the art of photography. The evolution of creating and streamlining the printed photograph has included chalk, silver nitrate, nitric acid, silver chloride, silver halide, silver salt solution, albumin or egg white, bitumen of Judea, aka Syrian asphalt, lavender oil residue dissolved in alcohol, pewter, lithographic stone, silver-plated sheets of copper, hyposulfate of soda, aka sodium thiosulfate, gelatin emulsion, thin sheet of iron, black lacquered iron, wet plate negative, and for cinema, the more familiar celluloid. Some of the descriptions and words for forms of photography exhibit a combination of mechanics and aesthetics. And the next bits have a bunch of quotes as well. Circa 1839, Louis-Jacques Mandet Daguerre's daguerreotype process started by fixing the images onto a sheet of silver-plated copper. He then polished the silver and coated it in iodine, creating a surface that was sensitive to light. Then he put the plate in a camera and exposed it for a few minutes. After the image was painted by light, Daguerre bathed the plate in a solution of silver chloride. This process created a lasting image that would not change if exposed to light. Calotype, C-A-L-O, or tallow, T-A-L-O, because of William Henry Fox Talbot in 1841, is from the Greek kalos, K-A-L-O-S, beautiful, and tupos, T-U-P-O-S, impression. That's where calligraphy comes from, beautiful writing. And Calliope is one of the muses. 1850s, the ambrotype, Greek for immortal impression, or amphitype, also known as colloidin positive in the UK, is a positive photograph on glass made by a variant of the wet plate collodion. Also known as collodion positive in the UK, is a positive photograph on glass made by a variant of the wet plate collodion process. The 1860s welcomed the tintype, and so it develops. Next section begins with a quote from Alan Watts. You can't look at your eyes with your eyes. You can't know a people by a bunch of photographs. A glimpse, perhaps, though even then it is a distorted view, or simply by the fact of its still lifeness. The photograph only catches a momentary expression and not the daily motions, the energies from living with the land for thousands upon thousands of years emanating from their faces. When first seeing Edward S. Curtis's sepia-tinted photos of so-called American Indians, it was an opening into an intriguing world both of people and photographic history. Many years later, this traveler would come to see those photos as half-truths, learning that the images were staged and not spontaneous, and rarely did they portray the original peoples in casual everyday garb. Part of the legacy became a romanticized view of the stereotypical and erroneous label of noble savage. And several quotes. In 1895, Curtis took his first portrait of a Native American subject, paying Princess Angeline, the aging daughter of Chief Seattle of the Puget Sound Indians, $1 to take her picture. In 1906, J.P. Morgan provided Curtis with $75,000 to produce a series on Native Americans. Theodore Roosevelt, like many of Curtis's eventual supporters, was more interested in obtaining a record of vanishing Native American cultures as a testament to the superiority of his own civilization than out of any concern over their situation or recognition of his own role in the process. However, Curtis was still at the beginning of his career and not yet as radical in his admonition of government policies towards Native Americans as he would later become, end quote. As with anthropologists merely studying a people rather than living with them, a photographer runs the risk of objectifying. What purpose a glimpse of an essence serves is up for discussion. Pictures in motion. The Lakota and probably most original peoples can talk a whole day without using nouns. The language so active because truly no thing is totally still. A rock's atoms in motion, a motionless meditating Buddha with its heart pumping blood, organs organing, untold inner visions, though nouns would fool you otherwise. The 1890s saw the inventions of the kinetograph from the Greek kineto, K-I-N-E-T-O, movement, motion, and graph, recording and writing, and kinetoscope, motion and to view. The cinematograph with the Lumiere brothers, Auguste and Louis, ushering in the age of movie theater. Their first private screening of projected motion pictures in 1895 in Paris at the Society for the Development of the National Industry in front of an audience of 200 people. In 1889, on the heels of the work of those before him, George Eastman added celluloid film to the mix, and the rest is blockbuster, sleeper, or Rotten Tomato history. The actual film, with its border of rectangular holes, allowed for forward motion as well as the ability to stop. And that, folks, is how the private kinetoscope peep show went public. As marvelous, enchanting, entertaining, and informing as a movie can be, this traveler still wonders what we as a species gave up in the bargain, the shift to moving pictures projected onto a screen. And in July of 1903, when the first Ford Model A was sold, a similar fate unfolded. Convenience, speed, the ability to visit more people, see more places. Yet an addiction to oil and polluting of the airs. And the last page section of this chapter, photosynthesis. Our eyes have become bigger than our stomachs, perceiving the world for the taking. The hungry ghost on the loose. Yet the greedy-eyed mind can be contained, and the way we see the world can change if people weren't so full of themselves, and instead became open to, receptive to, the light. According to the simplified version, plant beings feed on or take in light, carbon dioxide, and water, then convert that so as to give out oxygen, in turn feeding the air all beings breathe. Each of us is a plant, taking in and giving out. And a little bit in a poetic form. So much space in the air where my fingers stop being fingers. Yet Curlian photography revealed the visible energy of a limb where a person had lost that limb. Revealed the light of a leaf after a section of that leaf was cut away. You see, the energy of the body, of dream, of ancestral homeland still glowing, invisible under the noon sun, as the sun's light via the moon on the garden night. While some debunk or give scientific explanations for Curlian photography, at the least it draws attention to the fact that living beings and even so-called objects made of living beings, for example, a coin, have auras or energy fields. And when a piece is so-called missing, some of its energy can still be present. Think of the ancestors. So thank you very much for listening. That was Chapter 6, The Tao of Photography from Photo Albums of the Heart Mind. And a little bit of a pseudo detour on the heart mind theme, but yet connected. And Chapter 7 kind of picks up that thread with Journey to the Center of the Heart Mind. So thanks again for listening. Have a good one.